going, you know, because when you want to bring somebody up, you're like, well, this is who, I don't even remember where we met. I just know our paths have crossed so many times in ministry where broken people meet, broken people like me and him meet, that we just become friends. His personality is infectious. That's in a good way. I'm going to let him share his testimony. Robert, come. Yeah.
Huh? Get the kids out of here.
I like being infectious. That's a good word.
All the kids can go to wherever they go. Usually when I'm starting to speak, they make a mass exodus. It's a beautiful thing, Robert.
Amen. I like being told I'm infectious. That's it. That's what I want. That's my goal. Yeah. I'm going to tell you, I do try to leave an impact on everybody that I meet. So, all right. So, my name's Robert Anderson. You know, my story is about grace through faith. That's it right there. I found Christ in a jail cell. And thank God. I fought it and fought it and fought it for years. I work with a program called Celebrate Recovery. And what we do in CR is we will write out our testimonies so we don't get off key, but I've never been able to stay on key. I've always ended up going off of my own thing. So I also work at Providence Ministries. And I love everything that I do. So let's go ahead and start this. I was born into a military family. My dad was in the Air Force. We traveled around. I was born in California, lived in Oklahoma, Florida, Iceland, everywhere. And my mother was one of those military moms. You know, she babysit all the kids on the military base, and we loved it because all of our friends came to our house. Now, everything was good until one of the kids went to the doctor, and their doctor noticed that somebody had been molesting one of the daughters or one of the kids my mother babysat. And it turned out that it was my dad and one of his friends. And we didn't know anything was wrong because he had been doing that to me and my sister ever since we were born. You know what I mean? So we, for a long time, man, we hid. We learned how to lie real young and didn't even know we were lying. So that was just part of the stuff we were brought up in. But, so it took him 2 years to do the investigation through the military before he was finally sentenced to Fort Leavenworth. If anybody's in military, you know what Leavenworth is. And, so he was fine. He got a 35-year sentence, and we ended up moving back into to my grandmother's house in Chattanooga. Chattanooga became my home, man. And, you know, my mother was born with some developmental disabilities, so she was in constant need of my father's attention, his help, his love, his pretty much everything. And the abuse that she went through, we didn't even see it until he was gone, and we got to see my mother thrive by herself. She had never had a job before. When he went to prison, she started working at the only place she could get a job, and that was washing dishes at the Cracker Barrel. And I'm going to tell you, she loved it. You know, she raised two kids on $5 an hour. I'm going to tell you, she was a real mama. But, we moved to Chattanooga. We were finally glad that we were rid of him, to be honest with you. He moved out. Him going to prison opened my mother up to flourish. And we got into school, and I was an awful kid. My mama didn't deserve everything. That I looked like that kid from Dennis the Menace, and I acted like him, too. It was bad. Has anybody seen that movie, Problem Child? Yeah. I was that kid. I was just bad, all the way bad. I was ADHD, couldn't sit still, couldn't mind, couldn't nothing. And but we moved in with my grandmother and my grandfather, and that was one of the only places we ever really felt safe. And we did great. Now, in school, I made good grades. I never made good grades. I actually showed up for school up until about the eighth grade. And when I hit ninth grade, something had came down. My mother and my father stayed married. So the whole time we were on our own, my mother was still married to my father because she never got a divorce, never thought that would be possible. I mean, he went to prison, she thought, for 35 years. And when I hit the 11th grade, it was the ninth grade, and in the middle of when my 10th grade year started, my dad was getting released from prison. Some stuff had came down. Something happened with the evidence. I'm not really sure what all happened, but that's a whole other story in itself. But since they were still married, he was released back into our house. And I'm going to tell you, that opened a whole door to a lot of different problems. You know, I wouldn't say I hated him, but I didn't like him. You know, after I got, I've grown up, Robert saw everything that was going on. We know the stuff my mother had to endure. And when he came back, my mother went straight back to clamming up. She was working at the Cracker Barrel. I got a job working at Taco Bell. I was working two jobs doing whatever I could to just not be at home. Me and my sister actually had to testify to help put him in prison. And it was a big deal. So when all this happened and he came home, I ended up moving out of my mama's house when I was 16 years old. And I moved into a trailer park right down the street in Lookout Valley out here in Chattanooga. I lived in Lookout Valley in this trailer park. And I'm going to tell you, God puts people in your life right when you need them the most. I mean, right when you need them the most. So I moved in with a friend of mine, and his family was drugs, meth, all of that. So, and I was still in school, making Fs, making whatever, just going to school as an escape. So I moved into this, there's a trailer park right down the road, and this lady said, you know, Robert, I'll rent you one of these trailers if you can show me proof that you're going to school every Friday. So if I showed her that proof that I went to school every Friday, she would rent me a trailer at 16 years old, completely against the law. But she held that trailer, and I gave her money for it, you know? That's the only way I graduated high school. I showed up every week. I was at school every day. But when you're at 16 years old living on your own, that opens the door open to a whole lot of new problems. So I hung out with my friends. We started smoking weed every day. We started partying on the weekends, drinking. And by the time I was 18, I was fully chemically dependent on opiates. I couldn't do nothing if I didn't have what I needed. I'd go straight into withdrawals. School was one of the only things that kept me safe. You know, I got a job. I ended up getting a job working as a photographer. As soon as I graduated high school, somebody offered me another job, and I started making more money. I was a photographer for like 10 years. I met this girl at this photography job, and I thought that this relationship could fix me. Have you ever been there where you think this girl never been in trouble? She never did drugs. She had family problems. Everything was falling apart for her, but she was a good kid. She never got in trouble, and I'm going to tell you, that's one of the only things that I resent the most when looking back at my life is the way I did her. The only thing she ever did was love me, and my addiction and everything that was Robert Anderson drug her straight through the mud. We got our own place. I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease called Behçet's. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that. It's kind of like lupus, and when I found out I had it, I ended up spending about 3 months in the hospital. And I thought it was my IV drug use. I was shooting up for a long time before anybody even knew it. I was hiding it. So if you're using and you're hiding your drug use, you're probably an addict. You know, that's I was dependent, didn't know where to turn. So, I learned how to sell drug at a young age. And the only reason I did that was so I didn't have to pay for them. Right? And I thought that was the only way to live. I looked up to the wrong people. That's where it started. I was looking up to the wrong people. So me and her, we moved in together because it's always good if you're not married to live together. You know how that works out. Moved in together. Things started falling apart. And the only thing I knew when me and her split, I came back to Chattanooga and I had nowhere to live. So I was running with my friends. Now, my friends, these are the friends like in addiction. My thinking was so messed up. These friends of mine, these were the same friends back in 2013. I had my last overdose. Since I've been alive, I've probably had about 5 overdoses. And on my last overdose, my friends, they pushed my body between the bed and the wall. You know what I mean? They took my car, they took my keys, took my phone, took all my stuff. And the cleaning lady, she's the one that found me and called the ambulance, and they Narcan'd me and brought me back to, you know, whatever. But I thought these people were my friends because when they realized I didn't die, they brought me my stuff back. My thinking was so tore up. Yeah. But, yeah, these are the people that I had in my life. I was running back and forth. One of the, Isaiah 48:10, see, I have refined you, though not as silver. I have tested you in the furnace of affliction. Boy, that right there defines my life. I was bouncing around in and out of jail. I couldn't hold down a job. I couldn't even hold down a car payment. So, insurance. Then I ended up getting my prison sentence. I By the time I got my last arrest, I had charges in Whitfield County, Walker County, Catoosa County, Hamilton County. I was just bouncing around in Georgia before I finally made it to prison. And I can remember thinking that God finally gave up on me. You know it? I've been mad at God my whole life, thinking he would have never gave me all these problems if he loved me. But it was me. He chased me through everything, sent a pastor into that church. I mean, I've talked to countless people. The lady that in the trailer park, I mean, every situation, every turn, every stop sign, there was always some mention of it, you know? And I'm the one that ran from it. His goodness, it was running after me. But, so I went to prison. The first prison I got to was Hayes State Prison in Tryon, Georgia. A level 5 close security prison. And I can remember getting off that bus being like, "One and I do not deserve this." Freaking out, you know? And it took me a while to get where I could actually walk and be comfortable. But I got a detail since I graduated high school. It's amazing what God can use in your past to put in your present so you can use it as a gift. So I got my high school diploma, and my job in the prison was helping people get their GEDs. Wow. I mean, I worked with so many grown men that didn't know how to read, and that was my gift, something that I had learned. I didn't even know that was possible to have a gift out of that. But I was one of the guys that got to walk all over the whole prison without getting searched all the time, right? So what ended up happening? Addiction, right there. An ugly head of addiction started rearing back up while I was in prison. And I can remember I was sitting in the TV room working with a guy on his math homework, because, I mean, my job's a GED guy. I'm helping the guy get a GED. And we're sitting there, and these three grown men are sitting in the TV room watching the Disney movie Madagascar. You know what I mean? Like, and loving it. And I was sitting there, and I was working with this guy and this other kid. Those three men got up when the commercial came on, and they went out, and this other little guy had a 5-year prison sentence, and he came and he grabbed the TV and started changing the remote to music videos. You know, that's rude. If you're in prison, you don't even touch the remote. We call that the trick box. You know what I mean? People get mad about that TV. So those guys had come back in. All three of them had a life sentence, and they wanted the remote back, and he didn't want to give it to them. So they stabbed that kid like 4 or 5, like, I mean, they stabbed him to death right in front of me. And I'm going to tell you, I can remember sitting there and just going over math homework. And then all of a sudden, the smell, it's amazing. I mean, like, I'm going to tell you, when that happened, everything kind of changed. At that prison, the surveillance cameras didn't even work. So everybody that was in that area at the time, they took this guy's body and put it in the shower. And it stayed there until count later on that day. And that was the first time I'd ever seen somebody that fast, right in front of me. And I can remember me and this guy, they locked both of us in the same room. And he was freaking out a little bit more than me, but I was freaking out not talking about it because I was still trying to be tough, you know. So everybody that was in that area of our dorm at that time, they just got moved to different prisons. That was it. That's the only thing that happened. They transferred all of us out. And I transferred from Hayes State Prison to Georgia State Prison in Reidsville, the first prison in the state of Georgia. It was built in 1932, and I got out there. And one of the reasons, when I got to Georgia State Prison, man, they had sent me a letter that told me that they have a in-mail service in-house service is what it is. So if you have a TPM or a parole's coming up or they have to give you medical information, they send you in-house mail. And when I transferred from Hayes State Prison to Georgia State Prison, I had got a TPM, which means tentative parole month. So in that month, the whole month of October, I was able to parole out from the 1st to the 31st. And I got to Georgia State Prison, didn't even know I had one coming up. But when I got to Georgia State Prison, I was there for about 2 weeks. And the first thing they told me was the guy that was working as an administration aide, helping people get their GEDs, was just released. So I got my old detail back. And I was like, okay, good. So quickly, real fast, when I'm talking about, and at this prison, they were a lot more, security was a lot higher. So I got in there, and in my dorm, my next door neighbor I knew from Dalton, Georgia. And then the guy that was 2 down from him, I knew from Chattanooga. So I had people in there that I knew. I can remember when I went to diagnostics in Jackson, you go through. You'll be surprised the people you run into in prison that you haven't seen in a while. You know what I mean? Like, you really will. I mean, they didn't die, okay? But I got to Georgia State Prison, and the guy that was next door to me, he had a 50-year prison sentence for vehicular homicide. I know, I couldn't believe it. Like, it happened in Walker County. And so when I say this man had his son, one day I was sitting in there. We had just got done with class. We'd all come back, and we saw the chaplain come in and tell this man that his son had died in a car accident. And I'm going to tell you, if you're in prison and something happens to your family and you can't do nothing about it, that's a kind of grief you'll never understand. That's hard. I prayed every day for my people that nothing would happen to them while I was locked up. This man, when I say it hit him hard, this man sat in front of, like, my prison cell was right there, and there's picnic tables that sat all around the outside of it. And when I say this man committed suicide, he slit his throat. Like, he died all over the place. Like, and I'm going to tell you, and this was my friend. I worked with him every day. And when he died, he was looking directly into my cell. Whoa, that went really loud. He was looking directly into my cell. And I'm going to tell you, it took him 6 hours to move his body. 6 hours. And I didn't know what to do because they locked every one of us down. They kept the doors open. And I sat there, and the only book that I owned was a Bible. You know what I mean? And I had opened up my Bible, and right down in the middle, and I went from Jeremiah, Psalms, Proverbs, all of them, and I had noticed that I had highlighted Jeremiah 29:11. You know, for I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord's, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. But I wasn't much of a Christian. I didn't even know what being a Christian meant. I used to believe when I was a kid, I was one of those kids that came to church on Sunday school and thought I was a Christian because I owned a Bible and went to church. That's what I thought a Christian was. You know what I mean? Still mad at God for everything. All this pain that I didn't even know I was carrying. I was mad at him for it. But what got me was those few verses after that, 29:12-14. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. Yeah, when you will seek me and you will find me when you seek me with your whole heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord. I will bring you back from captivity, and I will gather you from all the nations and places that I have banished you. Whew, that hit different at that moment. You know what I mean? It really did. And even today, I know if I'm going to believe that the Bible is real and every word in there is true, I have to believe that the Lord's going to hear me when I seek him with my whole heart, right? I have to believe that that's true in all situations. And that right there is what stuck with me. It still sticks with me today. It's like, you know, well, if I seek him with everything inside of me, he's going to hear me. So after they lifted the lockdown with the guy that they, I went straight into the shower. If you've ever been to prison or jail, you know when you go into the shower, that's where you pray, that's where you cry, that's where you do all your business because you still got to maintain yourself. So I went in there and I took all my anger out towards God, to God. You know what I mean? You go and you give him just this much, you know. Everybody ever made a deal with God? Lord, if you get me out of here, I'll do whatever you want. One of those prayers? Yeah. I told him, I was like, if you can just get me out of here, I'll do whatever you want, man. And it's crazy what God does to give you hope, you know, especially in a place like that. So I told you about my in-house mail. I got my letter saying that I had a TPM and my prison counselor had come in there. These prison counselors have 400 and 500 people on their list to work with. So, I mean, if you see one of them, you know something's happening. And she came in and she said, hey, you've got a TPM coming up. And this was September the 22nd, okay? She came in and told me that I had a parole month of October 2017. I was like, yeah, well, I'm not going to make parole. I got a 6-year prison sentence, you know. So I'd been in trouble. I mean, I had sold drugs, caught with drugs, used drugs, failed drug tests, drugs, all the way the whole time through there. So I never thought that I was going to get out on parole. And she said, well, it's going to be October, so October 1st we'll come in and reevaluate and see where we're at. And I'm going to tell you, those were the longest 10 days of my whole prison sentence. Even though I didn't think I was going to make parole, every morning I wake up like, Lord, I'm seeking you. You remember, he says right here, if I seek you, I will be found. And so I can remember on October the 1st, she never came in. On October the 2nd, I can remember walking in and I saw the O.J. Simpson parole hearing, right? Yeah. So I was sitting there watching O.J. Simpson get parole, and I watched them grant that man parole. And I knew right then if O.J. could get out, anybody could get out. That was what God used to give me hope, you know? And I was like, and not even 2 hours later, I was like, you know what? I think this is going to work. And 2 hours later, she came in and she said, you're going home on October the 5th. And I was like, what? That's insane. I didn't even have a parole address. When I was in Jackson, that's our diagnostics, you get two options for parole address. They check both of them. The first one I put was an ex-girlfriend. It was her father's house. And last time I saw him, I stole his car and sold it. So I know that wasn't going to work, you know? But it was an address. And then I used the second address, was a fake address for one of the guys that was in jail. I just needed something to write down. Hopefully something would stick. And at the very bottom of the page, I wrote two words, Providence Ministries. Not an address, nothing, just two words. And that's what worked. Yeah, Providence Ministries. It's a thrift store. I didn't even know they had a rehab and a homeless shelter and our master's camp. And I didn't know none of that. You know, I'm not even from Dalton. But I couldn't leave the state of Georgia because all my charges were in Georgia and I'm from Chattanooga, right? So I couldn't leave the state of Georgia, so I had to find a Georgia address. So Providence Ministries it was. On October 5th, I got released, and those people quickly took me in. They gave me a shower. I got to shave. I got to eat. They gave me a bed. They gave me clothes. And I got down there, man, and the whole time, you know, you'd think when you get there, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this right way. I wanted to run as soon as I got off that bus. You know what? That's the only thing that kept pounding through my head was, well, let's just wait until tomorrow. Let's just wait until tomorrow. That Sunday, Brother Roy preached on the wages of sin is death. Whoa, I'm going to tell you. And, boy, Brother Roy, I'm going to tell you, that man right there has been doing this for a long time. And he could see that look. And I told him after it was over with, I was like, hey, man, I appreciate it. I felt like he was talking to me the whole time. And he goes, you know, Robert, the best thing about this is right now, you can be whatever kind of man you want to be. You get to choose. Whew, blew me back, man. It's like these people, they're giving me encouragement and honesty and showing me compassion. I ain't never seen stuff like that. Not like that. You know what I mean? Like all my life, I've had to fight and fight and fight and get and get and get and take and take and take. And that next Thursday, Ricky Long, he is the guy that run the homeless shelter. He said, hey, Robert, on Thursdays, all the guys go to this thing called Celebrate Recovery. You know, if you wanted to ride with the guys in the program, you could just get on the van. And I was like, I can remember I was so mad at Ricky Long because he was calling me an addict. I didn't think I was an addict. I just made horrible life choices based on a substance. All the people in my life were in there because of the substance. Just got out of prison based on a substance, but I wasn't an addict. I didn't think I had a problem, right? Yeah. So I was like, he said, no, dude, calm down, man. They're serving tacos, and if you want to eat, they'll give you free food. I was like, okay. So I jumped on the bus, and I went to Celebrate Recovery on Thursday night. Yeah. And I sat in the back row, and this one lady, Miss Maylene Pritchett, she came up to me. I sat in the back row. I just wanted to eat my tacos and be done with it. And I sat in the back row and didn't talk to nobody. And she came up and was like, hey, what's your name? So, and I look at her, and I was like, look, lady, we ain't buddies. You ain't got to do this. Still mad. I don't know why I was angry. I didn't want to let nobody in. I had my guard up. I didn't want to try. I didn't want to give not even an inch. And so that night, Miss Maylene, she got up and gave the message on lesson three, hope. Whoa. Tore me apart. That lady got up that night. She gave the message on hope. She said, you know, at Celebrate Recovery, you know, what I love about Celebrate Recovery is we're a family here. And once you come to CR and you get involved, you never have to be alone again. And I was like, God, I didn't even know I was alone. You know, I didn't. I've been fighting so long, I didn't understand. I didn't even get it. So I started listening to her. Then she said, Matthew 11:28, she said, you just look at that. And it says, then Jesus said, come to me, all who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Yeah. She said, look that up. Get on that Google and look that verse up. See what you can find out about it. And so I did, and I just started looking at stuff, and I just, that led to me talking to Ricky, which led to me talking to a chap who's our director, and it turned into coming back next Thursday, and then coming Sunday, and then Chaplain Wesley asking me, he's like, hey, man, I was going to move out of Providence, and Chap said, why don't you stick around for a little while? And I was like, well, I don't really want to just hang around at homeless shelter. And he said, well, let's give you a job. So I got a job driving people to every appointment that they needed to go to. And I was really good at that job. I showed up every day and took everybody everywhere they needed to go. And the one thing I learned is while I was working there, man, I saw people coming in who were broken just like me. You know what I mean? The best feeling in the world is working with somebody and watching the lights come on. You get to see things happen. It's amazing. The change, the process, the development, that all of that. So I was like, you know what? I will. That turned into another job. Now I work. I run the homeless shelter now. That Ricky Long passed away in 2020. And now I see people come in who are just as broken as I was, with no clothes, looking to eat some tacos. You know what I mean? Like, it's amazing what God can do. So all of that stuff that was in my past, God has used it to help me help other people. And that, it's amazing. God never wastes a hurt. Not one. Nothing. Not one tear, not one hurt, not one pain, none of that. And so I started working at Providence as the guy that drove people around. Then I kept going to Celebrate Recovery every week, and I became a leader over there. And then I became a team member who helps keep the ministry together. And then a group of us, we had people in Calhoun that we couldn't even reach. So we went and started our own CR in Calhoun. And it's amazing what just 8 people sitting around a table has turned into. It's turned into 60-something people getting through a step study, a 12-step. People turning their life over to Christ. We baptized 135 people last year. That's amazing. Back in 2019, Corey Dixon, one of the counselors, was like, Robert, why don't you start going back to school with me? And I was like, I think my school days have sailed, buddy. I don't think school's the answer. And he said, well, just come down there and talk to the lady. So I went down there, and I left that building with books in my hand. I didn't even have a computer. And I was like, look, man, if I'm going to do this, I'm not going to stop. Like, I'm going to get every goal that I set. I didn't have a computer the whole first year that I went to college. And I used the Microsoft Word app on my phone and still did it. You know what I mean? I graduated my bachelor's degree this past May, and I start my master's program on the 18th. I'm a drug and alcohol counselor with the state of Georgia. We run the homeless shelter. God's used everything in my past to help reach the lost. Last year, we did 168 people in our homeless shelter for the year, which I thought that was a crazy number for a homeless shelter for the year. We've already done over 200 this year. Just people that are broken, looking for a change. It's amazing. We got drug court. We got mental health court. We got domestic violence court. I had a guy last January, man. I just had surgery on my ankle. And he had come at me with a knife and a pair of scissors because I had to ask him to leave. And even through that process, even that situation, when he moved out into the motel behind us, like the shelter sits right here, and there's a motel that sits right here. He went to jail, and I did everything I could to not get that guy to go to prison. I tried to get him a mental health court. We got him into the motel back there. We took him food every day. We gave him clothes. We gave him everything, all the services we could give him, a case manager, a counselor. We got him to Highland Rivers. Everything we could throw at him, we threw at him. And through that process, you got to see real lives change. Because when you've got the opportunity to be mad and show somebody anger and hate and whatever those feelings are, and you show them love and compassion and kindness, you get to watch God work. You get to see real changes happen in somebody's life. Like, I'm not the same person no more. When I got saved, saved, saved. Like, everything inside of me changed. And when I say everything, I'm talking like, it's amazing to see. I went back to my family and just talking to my mother and my grandmother and all them. Like, I can see just how sick they really are. You know, it's like, wow. It's amazing what God can do when that light shines through you. That song today, the light of love shining through you. Wow. I love watching the lights come on in somebody's eyes. Kevin Shelton, he works at Providence Ministries. He is our board of directors. And it's amazing what that ministry can do when you just show up. I think showing up is 50% of the battle. If you can just show up and be present, you don't even have to want to be there. But if you show up, you can start serving right there. And service is the number one way to find out what God's plan is for you. You jump in, you get into service, just serve and help everybody around you. If you don't know, that's going to turn into a path. That path is going to turn into a plan. That's where you get to see Christ. But I appreciate y'all letting me come and share. I work with Celebrate Recovery, and usually we have a whole strict time thing. I asked Melissa, I said, so how long do I got? And she said, you get up there and just share. They usually make you read, too, and I'm not good at reading. I get up here, and it just goes sideways most times. But thank y'all for letting me share.
Let's all stand as musicians come. You think...